Hey everybody, and welcome to a brand new episode of the SmackDown Summary here on Inside the Ropes. My name is Kenny McIntosh, joined as always when we talk about SmackDown by Sondra. Hi Sondra, how are you?
Hi Kenny, I'm doing all right, recovering from the holidays. SmackDown on Christmas Day with my parents-in-law was a load of fun. How are you?
I'm good, yeah. We just recorded the Retro Raw rundown for the December 21st, 1998 episode. The first 6 or 7 minutes is us talking about Christmas and what we did and blah blah, so we're not going to repeat that here, but it is there, so go listen to it there if you want to hear us talk about that. And 1998 shenanigans, including Mark Henry being sexed kinkily on a table, Hawk telling us very incoherently the draws as his drug dealer, and Shawn Michaels commissioning fairly badly.
I mean, he's trusted so little by Vince McMahon that Vince puts Shane in charge of the show, which can only go well.
Exactly. But we're here to talk about the Christmas Day SmackDown, which ended up being a fun show. We kick off the show, it's in Fresno, California. It was taped right after last week's show, so the people in the audience are... Now, I don't want to cast aspersions here, but during the main event, I'm pretty positive we have piped in crowd noise, because the crowd sounded so into it, and they didn't look so into it.
So, I have no idea. I can never tell when crowd noise is piped in. Like, it is just this blind spot in my watching of wrestling. Like, I never noticed it when I used to watch SmackDown regularly before it was live. I never noticed this stuff. And especially when I'm, like, you know, talking to other people watching the show, I wasn't, like, really paying close attention to piped in crowd noise. So it didn't really occur to me. But a couple people said that maybe the noise was piped in, and I wouldn't doubt it.
Yeah.
Although I don't know why they weren't into the main event, because I thought it was really good.
Well, I think it's more just it was a long night. They would have sat through 205 Live, maybe two tapings of that.
Yeah,
and a full SmackDown.
Well, no, I don't think it was two tapings, because this week's 205 Live was a best of 205 Live show.
Oh, so they would have had 205 Live December 19th, then SmackDown December 18th, then this one.
Which is still a lot of wrestling.
We start off the show with R-Truth making his entrance as Santa Claus. Carmella's dressed as a sexy Christmas lady.
Carmelfla.
There's Christmas trees at ringside. Truth said he'd been delivering presents to all the good boys and girls with the help of Carmelfla. She called for a carol break, which led to them singing a Christmas song while dancing. And then, of course, as he should, Daniel Bryan interrupts them. He said that he accepts that as WWE champion, he has to spend time in the cesspool rather than with his family. He would not accept a Truthy Clause, because he's not the real Santa. He pointed at both of them and said, fickle, like, a large amount of times. Santa is the epitome of the cheap material desires of the fans, costs us half the coral reef on the planet, led to the islands of misfit garbage in the oceans. He said, with the temperatures rising, there'll no longer be a North Pole or Santa Claus in 2028. I feel like he's literally telling us the end of the world is coming and we're not listening to him. But that's fine.
No, that's exactly what's happening. And he's not wrong. Like, that's the thing, is he's not wrong about all of this. The island of misfit garbage, that line popped me so hard. It's a big problem. Like, some of the, you know, plastic things in the ocean, it's very bad. And of course, it's just interesting hearing the crowd be like, boo the environment, yay, we love material things and pollution. We love that we're killing the world and living a completely unsustainable lifestyle.
Truth calls him an angry little elf. Bryan says he expects jokes from R-Truth since his entire career has been a joke. Truth reminded him he'll be number 30 in the Royal Rumble and could be the last one laughing if he wins the Rumble and takes the title from Daniel Bryan. Bryan asks him how he can expect to win the Rumble when he can't even count to 30. Truth tried to prove him wrong, made it to 7, then called for a dance break. And as they were dancing, Bryan attacked him, ended up wrapping his knee around the ring post multiple times, put in a leg lock, released the hold, and just kind of took in the booze. I thought this was an excellent opening segment for a holiday show, because usually the kind of holiday, like Raw opened up with the Medical and 34 street fight, or Medical, yeah. And that was fine, but like this was like a really good segment that had... It's very hard to do like a Christmas thing and a good storyline thing in the same go. I thought they did a really good job with this one.
Oh, I think they did. Like, as much as Christmas is not the holiday for me, I do love cheesy holiday segments in general. Like, I love the cheesy Halloween ones. I love cheesy Valentine's Day ones. I love cheesy Thanksgiving ones. And if I can just ignore the fact that it's Christmas, I kind of love cheesy Christmas segments too. So this kind of hit all the right notes, right? It was actually funny because R-Truth is one of those guys who actually can do wrestling comedy in WWE. It's very difficult to do because a lot of times the things they think are very funny are just not. But you get someone like R-Truth or Tyler Breeze on the case and they can produce some gold. And it's interesting to me that Daniel Bryan, as the WWE champion, is the one interrupting this, right? Because R-Truth and Carmella are not on the level of Daniel Bryan. He is the actual champion and deserves to be the actual champion. But I love that he, like, as champion, kind of fancies himself the leader of SmackDown, as well he should, because he is the leader of SmackDown. And he is just not going to stand for the celebration of material things. I don't know. Daniel Bryan is hitting all the right notes, too, in terms of, like, sort of morphing into CJ Parker's old NXT character, but doing it so much better than CJ Parker did. I mean, I really liked CJ Parker too, but it's weird that, like, when Daniel Bryan started doing some of this, like, environmentalist heel stuff, I was like, if this goes too far in any direction, it's just going to be cringy, or it's just going to be bad, or it's going to feel inauthentic. Because Daniel Bryan, as guy who turned on the crowd because they were fickle and didn't support him as well as they could have, and all of that kind of stuff, like, that's really interesting emotional character development. I hate you because you hate the environment could be really, really terrible. But I think because we know that Daniel Bryan really believes these sorts of things, and because his delivery is so good, and because he's just such a great performer, it absolutely works. So, and it, R-Truth is also one of those guys who, like, you know, like Heath Slater, like Tyler Breeze, like, you know, I don't believe for a moment that R-Truth is going to win the Royal Rumble. Even if he's not entrant number 30, I don't believe that R-Truth has a chance of winning the Royal Rumble, because that's crazy, right? But in the moment, it's like he believes that he could win the Royal Rumble, and he believes that being number 30 is really going to help him. And Daniel Bryan sells it as like, no, I'm going to take you out as my competition in the, because I don't want you to win the Royal Rumble, because I want to keep my title. So I think the characters believing in themselves and believing in the story makes me more invested in the story. And I really, really liked this.
I'm now in the time frame where I'm just like, who is Daniel Bryan going to face at WrestleMania? Like, it's going to be really interesting, because he's doing so well as a heel that, like, you kind of need someone as a babyface who is really good. And they don't have a lot of babyfaces that are really good. So it'll be interesting to see what happens.
I'm very intrigued. I mean, like, someone got in touch and said, do you think that he'll face Mustafa Ali at the Royal Rumble? And it kind of seems to be going that way. And I'm so okay with it. I mean, we'll talk more about Mustafa Ali in a little while, but
we'll talk more about him right now.
Oh, right now. Yeah. Because that match is coming up.
There was a video that they did on WWE's YouTube channel and their social media channels. And it was Mustafa Ali backstage the day that he found that he was a SmackDown Live roster member and did the tag match. And it was really good.
I haven't seen that. I need to watch it.
And so he has this little like cute thing where he talks about, like, his wife has this thing where, like, after every match he has to text her the letter K to mean he's okay, because she knows that he'll get to him later, but he has to go back and text that to her and all this kind of stuff. And anyway, he's just a really nice guy, and
it's
a really good video. But he is now part of the SmackDown Live roster, so he faces Andrade Cien Almas, and they have a pretty nice match. Almas is dying as a character, so I hope that something happens with him soon. But Mustafa Ali does get a win. It was a good win for him. He seems to be featured pretty prominently on SmackDown, so it's a good start for him.
Yeah, I really liked this match a lot. I mean, there was no way it was going to be bad, right? It's Andrade Cien Almas versus Mustafa Ali. It's going to be good. I think Mustafa Ali does really well at evading moves. Like, there was a bit where I think Andrade was going to go for the double knees in the corner, and Mustafa just kind of like sneaks away from it really well. He does that better than I think some of the other members of the roster. So that's the kind of thing I appreciate, like evading your expectations in wrestling kind of helps me get into matches. It made me laugh because my father-in-law had no idea what the deal with Zelina Vega was. It's like, does that little girl just go along and like bitch at him the whole time? And I was like, yes, essentially that is her purpose right now. Like, I guess I'm kind of two minds about this. Like, I love that Mustafa Ali got the win here. I love it because I think bringing Mustafa Ali in as a new character from 205 Live and then having him win and having him do good things is great. Like, it's great for 205 Live because he's still talking about his roots and where he came from. Like, as in, he was a 205 Live performer and now he's on SmackDown Live and he can flourish. And I think that's amazing. And I mean, Mustafa Ali has been one of my favorite guys on 205 Live as well. So seeing him get to win things on SmackDown is great. Like seeing him get to pin the WWE champion last week, the look on his face was kind of like the look on my face, right? Like he couldn't believe that this is what he's doing and where he is in his life right now. It's a bummer for Andrade Cien Almas. Like he's just not doing a whole lot, but I don't think it necessarily will like hurt him permanently or anything like that, because he's losing to important people. And I think he's someone that you could definitely heat up and have him have a feud with someone, but they just don't have a good story for Andrade right now. Like, I don't know. My go-to is always, hey, could we bring back Luke Harper and have Luke Harper and Andrade Cien Almas have a story? Because Luke Harper is a great babyface, and I would really like to see him on my television as soon as possible, please. But, I mean, they put on a really good match, and Andrade is still someone that I definitely want to see in matches. It's just he hasn't been doing a whole lot, and it's a bummer because he and Zelina are great together. They have a great act. I think that they could be doing a lot more, but it's just... I don't know. He's just not the guy who's the focus right now. But seeing Mustafa Ali get to do things and be a prominent star makes my heart so, so happy.
Well, maybe there will be a Rumble match with Mustafa Ali and Brian. Obviously, it's not a big box office match. But if you've got other stuff in the show that's going to be those kind of matches...
But the Royal Rumble sells the Royal Rumble, right? Like, it's kind of the show where you can do a Mustafa Ali versus Daniel Bryan and get away with it, because the Royal Rumbles are going to be kind of the selling points of those shows. So the Universal title and, well, I mean, is Brock fighting at the Rumble? Is that happening?
Brock and Braun.
Oh, right. Okay. But
you know that new match that they've been clamoring for?
Oh, yeah, sure. But... You know, you can do a Daniel Bryan versus Mustafa Ali, because it's not like you're selling that on the main event of like the title matches, right? You're selling it on the Royal Rumble and who's going to win and the intrigue of that. So I think it's kind of the perfect spot to put Daniel Bryan versus Mustafa Ali. And then, I mean, after the match, when Mustafa is backstage talking to the 205 Live roster and then, you know, sees Shelton Benjamin and stuff. I can't remember if it happens right after this, but might as well just talk about it now. Mm-hmm. You know, he sees Shelton Benjamin, kind of confronts him. And I was like, oh, could we get Shelton Benjamin versus Mustafa Ali also? Because that'd be great. And we might get that next week. We'll see.
And then Ali gets attacked by Daniel Bryan.
And then Mustafa Ali gets attacked by Daniel Bryan. So Daniel Bryan is still upset with Mustafa Ali about, you know, being pinned by him and about, like, I don't know. Is Daniel Bryan upset that Mustafa Ali, like, doesn't belong here? Is that what he's about? Like,
or is he upset that he beat him?
Or is he upset that he beat him? Is he upset that he's like kind of taking his spotlight? I don't know. But I'm definitely intrigued by the story of Mustafa Ali and Daniel Bryan, especially because they, like, in some ways they are so similar, right? Like, Daniel Bryan was the best babyface and this family man who loves his wife and his daughter and is really sweet. And now Daniel Bryan has just like flipped this switch where he's the new Daniel Bryan and he's super, super evil. And Mustafa Ali even said it in his promo to Daniel Bryan last week where he was like, I looked up to you. You know, like, you were the one who like made me believe that guys like me can do whatever we want to do. And so now Daniel Bryan attacking Mustafa Ali, I think it's just a really compelling story and kind of tugs at my heartstrings. And I really want to see more from them.
They could have a great match if they go like 20 minutes. Samoa Joe does a promo from the locker room. He's talking about Jeff Hardy and said that, you know, he trusted that Jeff and his family are enjoying the holidays. It's nice to create some new memories, perhaps to make up for the ones that Jeff destroyed. Joe said he's concerned about Hardy because he saw a look in his eye. And he's become Jeff's new addiction.
I'm just so, so, so not into this story. Like, so not into this story, Kenny. Really don't like it. Again, Samoa Joe's delivery of these lines is good. He's very good at what he does. He's good at sounding authentic.
The
but
problem
it's just...
is, there's been no look in Jeff's eye. Jeff's fine.
Yeah. He doesn't seem angry. I mean, you know, we'll get to it later in their match. He seems a little angry for the first time, but like Jeff seems okay. It's not like anything's happened recently to make us. And you know, what I do not want is for Jeff to like come out pretending to be drunk on SmackDown or anything like that. We do not need this to turn into just like the full Hawk and Animal story of 1998. Isn't it weird? Like, we're watching these, like, they are actually 20 years apart. Like, that's one of the weird things about Retro Raw is when these parallels happen, like, they're actually happening 20 years apart. Like, who's the draws in this situation? Is someone going to push Jeff Hardy off the Titantron? He normally jumps of his own accord. But yeah, the story's so crap.
Let me Google something very quickly. Do you know? Oh, yes, it's so good. Hold on.
Oh, no. What is this?
That at this point, right? Jeff Hardy right now is the same age Hawk was in 1998.
Are you serious?
They were both 41 years old.
Wow. Jeff Hardy looks so much better than Hawk.
And Jeff Hardy's probably taking the same amount of drugs.
Right, that's the crazy thing. Because, like, I mean, I always forget what Hawk looks like under the makeup. Like, I know we just recorded Retro Raw, but like when we saw Hawk come out in the episode that we were talking about, I totally forgot who he was again. And then when they put the camera on him and they weren't showing his cast arm, I was like, is that Hawk or Animal? I don't know.
Jeff Hardy, he literally is drinking the blood of the young. That
Like,
is what
does he
he is.
have like a farm of, you know, like children's souls or something that he is just like consuming? How does he look as good as he is? And
I
like,
mean,
how does he move as well as he does too? I
I
know
stood
that he's in
beside
pain
him
and is injured and stuff, but
at that SummerSlam interview we did. Like, he looks good up close as well. Like, there's some people who look good
does
on
he? So it's
TV.
not just like camera tricks and makeup?
Nope, he just looks really good. No
Good
idea.
for him.
Up next, we get an 8-man tag with the Usos and the Club against the Bar and Sanity. They have a kind of they have a match that goes about, I can't remember how long it went. Anyway, the match was fun. In the end, the Usos are throwing super kicks at everybody, and then Gallows and Anderson perform the Magic Killer on Cesaro, and then Carl Anderson pins Cesaro. Maybe we are shaking things up, Sandra. Carl Anderson pinned a tag
Carl
team champion.
Anderson pinned Cesaro. Yeah, so I mean this match was it was a standard match, right? Like and for a standard SmackDown tag team match, that's a good thing in sense of like it's going to be good wrestling and it was a lot of fun and I liked it. And I was so glad to see Sanity back on my television. I was so happy to
And
see
Killian
Sanity back on
Dane.
my television. Killian Dane looking awesome in this match, right? So yeah, I was super glad to see them. I like that we are giving more tag teams the spotlight. Are the Club baby faces now then?
Yes.
Like, okay. So I wasn't sure about that. It kind of bums me out to see Cesaro just getting pinned because I really, really love him and he is a champion and it is the most lazy WWE trope. Like, oh, this person has pinned a tag team champion, so now they're going to get a tag team title shot at whatever, either on TV or at Royal Rumble or whenever. We don't really know. But I am glad that more tag teams are coming to the forefront. I'm glad that the wrestling remains really, really good. I'm glad SmackDown remembered that it had more than one talent or more than three talented tag teams on the roster. You know, it was fun enough, and I guess we'll see where it leads. Like, I want to like the Club so badly. I want them to become a thing that I'm interested in. Out of all four of the teams that were in this match, they are the team that interests me the least. So them getting the pinfall win, like, okay, Club, sure, fine. Like, I would rather have Sanity in that position, but you know, I can't have everything, and it makes sense that to build more babyface contenders for the Bar. So yeah, it's fine, and the wrestling's really good.
Yeah, it looks like we're maybe building towards the Club and the Bar for the tag titles. Could be a fun match. We'll see. Got another video package focusing on all the call-ups that are coming up. Lars Sullivan, Heavy Machinery, Lacey Evans, Nikki Cross, and EC3. Then The Miz comes down
Come
for
to
Miz.
SmackDown, Nikki. Come play with us.
The Miz comes out for Miz TV. The World Cup trophy's sitting on a table with a Santa hat in the bowl. Miz introduces his guest, Shane McMahon, who's, you know, slapping hands with the fans coming down. He spoke about the McMahons being in charge of Raw and SmackDown. They're not the real story. They're listening to the fans. They want new superstars, new matchups, new opportunities, and they'll be getting them. Miz said there are four McMahons running the show, and that means Shane could have a little free time to join him in becoming the best tag team in the world. He wants to team with Shane because of Vince. He says that he wants to team with Shane because of his own father. He said that despite every accomplishment he's made in his life, it's never been enough for Miz's dad. He says his father thinks Shane is something else because he fights for what he believes in. Miz said his father told him that if he teamed with Shane, they could be the best team in the world. It'd be a damn good tag team. Shane would just give it a chance. He goes on to, you know, just try his hardest to get Shane to team with him. Talks about, you know, putting things in the hand of the WWE Universe. It wasn't their decision to make. He asked the fans if they want to see Miz and Shane form a team. The fans chanted yes. Shane said everything Miz said was heavy and resonated with him. You better not screw me or there's going to be major consequences. And they shook hands, hugged, held up the trophy, and Miz and Shane are now a tag team.
They are a tag team and I love it. I love it. And I could have done without the corporate like we're listening to the fans for like 2 minutes or whatever at the beginning of Miz TV because I just can't be bothered. Like I don't care who's in charge of SmackDown. I don't care about all four McMahons running it. I'm so tired of hearing we're listening to the fans. That doesn't mean anything. You have to show your work and put on a good show. Thankfully, SmackDown seems to be showing its work and putting on a good show, because it's actually made me interested in a Shane McMahon thing, Kenny. What is happening? The Miz is actual magic. Like Michael Farah pointed out on Twitter to me, like, the Miz is actual magic. Like, he made me interested in Dolph Ziggler at one point. He is making me interested in a Shane McMahon thing. This was so good. Miz bringing up the drama and the real life, you know, thing that he's had with his dad for so long. Like, I've heard Miz for years in interviews say that, you know, Miz's dad doesn't respect him or doesn't like him as a superstar. He's always asking about Kofi Kingston. He's always asking about John Cena. He's always asking about characters that aren't the Miz. And Miz is always just kind of like, I'm your son and I'm a wrestler and I was WWE champion and I main evented WrestleMania. Like, that's a big deal, right? And, you know, and he, I think he said it in last week's promo too, where, you know, his dad never said that he was proud of him until, you know, he became best in the world and all that kind of stuff, right? Like, that's emotional drama. Like, that's really interesting. And then him playing on kind of Shane also having a father who's never really said that he's proud of him. He's never really shown that he's very proud of Shane and everything that Shane's done. He's always wanted more from his children. He's always wanted Shane to do better. He's always wanted Shane to, you know, step it up or, you know, grab the brass ring or whatever, you know, all those things that Vince McMahon says. Them being a tag team based on fathers who were never proud enough of them is very, very interesting to me. And of course, like, it's the Miz, right? Like, you have to kind of assume this is all heel tactic. This is all going to lead to him, like, just wanting glory for himself or him, like, clinging to Shane's coattails or something. But Miz hasn't shown anything so far that proves to us that he's not 100% genuine. And I think that the Miz is genuine about parts of this, and it just works for me. Like, there's a really good story here.
Who would have thought that there'd be a really good story between Miz and Shane McMahon together? Again, see, this thing, you have this thing with Shane McMahon, right? Where you don't like him, but then, like, sometimes he does stuff or he's involved in stuff that you do really like.
Mm-hmm. Well, when it's good and it makes sense, and it actually, I think when I like Shane McMahon is when he feels embedded in the roster and when he is part of a story, not just lording over a story. Like, Shane McMahon at Survivor Series, it felt like he was lording over the story and it felt like it was the Shane McMahon show and like he was the one who was the star. This is him actually being involved with other characters on the roster and being, you know, a part of something. And I think that's maybe the difference.
Yeah, no, it could be. I thought it was a good segment. It's one of those stories where I just don't really know. I mean, I assume maybe one of them will turn on the other and that'll be a WrestleMania match. And that's what this is. Which is
fine.
It
probably will be.
I mean, as long as they can be more successful than Y2AJ.
Remember that?
Jesus Christ.
That was so bad. But then, I mean, that's another example of something Shane McMahon did that I liked. I mean, I loved Shane's WrestleMania match with AJ Styles.
That was a great match. Maybe the best match on that show.
Mm-hmm. I think it was. And so it's, I mean, with Miz and Shane having the story behind them too, like, as long as Shane McMahon's not trying to wrestle like 35 minutes and, I don't know, go way too, because how long was Shane versus AJ? It wasn't super long, was it?
I shall find it for you right now. The match that they had at WrestleMania was...
And they added the drama of that. Like, they had, you know, it had to be a regular wrestling match was part of the story, which was interesting.
They wrestled for... Do-do-do-do-do... 20 minutes.
Okay, so, I mean, longer than I thought, but it worked. And it, I don't know, when Shane McMahon matches don't work, like with The Undertaker, for instance, it's just like they're going long because they think that epic needs to mean long. Like, matches don't have to be long to be good. Look at Goldberg and Brock Lesnar. Like, Goldberg and Brock Lesnar was great, and it was like 4 minutes, wasn't it? But that was all you needed. You didn't want 30 minutes of Goldberg versus Brock Lesnar. That's all you wanted. You wanted it to be short and punchy and interesting. You have to fit the match to the characters and to the story and to what makes sense for it, not just have a Triple H epic all the time.
I'm with you. Rusev does a promo backstage where Lana's there, saying that it wasn't just Christmas, it's also his birthday. It's Rusev Day. He would bring fans a new handsome US champion by defeating Shinsuke Nakamura, which then takes us into Samoa Joe versus Jeff Hardy. They have just a match.
They have, like, a match.
And, like, they do moves well, but It's just a match.
I mean, I can't remember any of the match until the end when Jeff Hardy finally starts to snap. Like, finally, after weeks of this, he does snap and he starts attacking Samoa Joe. Does he attack him with candlesticks or something? I can't remember. Is he trying to be Charlotte?
Yeah, so he clotheslines him from the apron and then he works him with the knees to the body when Joe covers him, is covered up against the barricade. That's when the referee calls for the end of the match because Jeff won't stop. He continues working him over. But then, of course, he then gets put a coquina clutch on the table at the end. So
okay, so there weren't kendo sticks. I was just trying to make it more interesting in my mind. But yeah, I mean, I like that Jeff Hardy's showing fire. I like that he's finally reacting to Samoa Joe. It's I don't know, like an angry Jeff Hardy is going to be more interesting than a smiling baby face. Nothing touches me, Jeff Hardy. Characters are more interesting when things touch and affect them. But this is not a story I wanted to continue at all. And now we're going to get more of it. And I don't want more of it. And I have had way too much of it already. So, I mean, I guess Samoa Joe standing tall is like he's dominant or something. We're going to get more of this, Kenny, and I don't really want it.
I can't see it making it to the Royal Rumble, though. I can't see it going on pay-per-view.
No, but I mean, I just don't want any more of it anywhere. Like, I want Samoa Joe and Jeff Hardy to not fight each other anymore. And, like, why are they just out here having promo segments against each other and not interacting with anyone else? And it feels like they're in that, like, Dolph Ziggler, Baron Corbin vortex where they can only talk and touch and face each other and not really have interaction with the rest of the roster. And they're just stuck in their terrible, terrible storyline.
Yeah, I mean, Samoa Joe is one of those. Samoa Joe has been really good this year. Like, he's been a really good character, but you know, I've been thinking about this, and the thing with Jeff Hardy is, Jeff Hardy rarely in his career has had a good feud, right?
Oh, really?
Like, because if you think about it, you had the CM Punk one in 2009, which was really good, and then I guess thinking about that, maybe it's not that shocking or as stupid as we think it is that they're doing this, because if you look at Jeff Hardy's career, as a singles wrestler, he's not really had that many great feuds. So the best one he's ever had involved this kind of story. So maybe
I guess I can't really compare because I haven't seen that story. But it's... And again, maybe it's Retro Raw just like making me hate this kind of story tenfold.
Which
because
very,
of
very
the one...
Understandable.
Because the one we're watching there is very, very bad. So, yeah, I don't know. I mean, you're not wrong. I mean, they do tend to go, hey, what worked in the past? Let's try and repeat that. Let's try and redo that, right? And sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't. You can't always recreate something that worked with another performer. And maybe, I mean, I'm just guessing, but I mean, CM Punk being so straight edge and whatnot as a heel probably helped propel that story just because is so like high and mighty and lording above. Like Samoa Joe is not a guy who's like, I never drink and I'm so much better than you.
Well, I'm trying to think. Let me a couple of wrestlers off the top of my head. Say Shawn Michaels, right? What great feuds has Shawn Michaels had over his career? The Jericho one in 08, the Kurt Angle one was pretty good. The feud with Bret was pretty good. Like the feud with Undertaker was great. Like so, he's had a lot of like good feuds in his career. Jericho's had Michaels and Owens and Michaels Owens. But the point is, everybody's got a couple of feuds that you kind of go, they were great. But then there's a guy like Jeff Hardy who, the feud with Punk was really good, but that's about it. He's had really good matches, like he's had a really good match with The Undertaker and different people, but...
Did he never even have anything good with Matt?
Oh no, their two feuds were terrible.
Were they really? I've never seen them. So I just kind of assumed that they would feud at some point.
Mm-hmm. They're not good. So yeah, I guess we'll see what happens to Joe and Jeff Hardy and where they go after that.
I want to look at positives and say, like, I'm glad that Jeff Hardy's reacting to things at least, but I don't know. You know, there's that.
Shinsuke Nakamura does a promo backstage saying that the Total Diva wants gold for Christmas, but she won't get it because she's been naughty this year. He's great. Very funny.
He's so good.
So I want to ask you about this because obviously this is a little bit of a shorter episode this week because there's not as much kind of story stuff going on, but there's a trailer for the Fighting With My Family film, and people are in an outrage, Sondra. Because
why
The
are
Rock,
people in an outrage?
The Rock is quite heavily featured.
Yeah.
And he's not really in the film that much.
Good! I was hoping that it was one of those situations where all we see of The Rock is in the trailer. Because I don't want The Rock all over this movie. The Rock has no place in this movie.
There is a great... I mean, if you look at the... If you look at the poster...
The Rock's like almost front and center, right? Like they have the page out front, and then the Rock's like right next to her, right?
Well, no, what I love about it is, like, I never thought I'd see the Rock outside of a 1980s semi-detached cottage house in the UK. And he's on a poster in front of that, and he looks so out of place there.
He really does.
It's great.
What do you think about the movie? I'm looking forward to it. Like, I'm going to go and see it.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. I think it should be good. When's it come out?
I don't know.
Oh, it'd be great if it came out around WrestleMania time. We could go see it in New York.
Oh, that would be fun.
Let me just Google it and see if it's got a release date. Fighting for my family.
Fighting with my family, isn't it?
All right, okay. Well, fighting.
19 film.
Release date.
Because I don't even know if there is there a release date set yet.
It comes out in the US on February 14th.
Okay, cool.
So, will it still be out 7 weeks later?
Maybe not. Maybe we can find like a cheap like second run theater.
Yeah. So then we have I wanted to ask you. So Vince McMahon did his appearance as Santa Claus on Raw. Said that in 2019 we're going to have women's tag team titles.
And good.
And that John Cena is going to return on Raw and SmackDown next week. So he's going to be on Raw
not
on Monday.
Good.
Sorry?
I said not good.
So, I mean, Cena's going to be on Raw and SmackDown next week. Now, as far as I've heard, he goes to film a movie on January the 20th. So he's probably not going to be at the Rumble or in the Rumble or involved. So he's not really going to be around to do a lot of story stuff. So I guess I'm going to try and ask you a different question than usual.
Mm-hmm.
If it were up to you, and he's going to be in the show next week, what would you like to see John Cena do on the New Year SmackDown?
I mean, and this is not just like me taking the piss and being like John Cena has no place here, but I genuinely don't know. Like maybe Miz TV?
Yeah, something like that, I guess.
Like, that's all I can think of, because if he's just going to come back for a one-off, which is fine, like, if they're trying to get a rating for New Year's Day, whatever, like, do it. He's John Cena. He's a big star. But, like, what do you do with John Cena at this point? Are you really going to have him have a match with someone? Like, who would he have a match with? I mean, unless you do, like, John Cena versus Mustafa Ali, and Mustafa Ali gets to beat him.
Yeah, maybe.
Maybe do that. That could be interesting. Because Mustafa Ali is on a roll right now, so... I mean, what better way to be like, holy shit, this kid really is super, super good. I mean, that doesn't do a lot for John Cena coming back and having matches and being important. But, like, I think we're past the point of John Cena coming back and having matches and being important as a thing. So maybe that's what I want. Either he just does Miz TV where, you know, Miz can kind of hang with him. I mean, he'll just make stupid jokes at the Miz about how the Miz wants to be Hollywood and John Cena really is Hollywood or something. But I think it would be like the least offensive use of John Cena would be just like some sort of dumb promo segment. Have him beat Mustafa Ali, or have Mustafa Ali beat him, not him beat Mustafa Ali. That's not what I would want at all.
Weird. So up next we get the Usos talking backstage. They're wishing each other Merry Christmas. And then Jimmy Uso is confronted by Mandy Rose and Sonya Deville under a mistletoe. Mandy tells Jimmy that he doesn't know what he's missing. And then Naomi throws a shoe at them. And then they kiss under the mistletoe. So I guess...
What even was this?
Maybe Naomi...
Like, apparently people told me, because I was like, have we ever seen Mandy Rose and Jimmy Uso interact on Twitter? Like, or interact at all? Because Mandy's like... You know, oh, you don't know what you're missing. And Naomi's like, you keep trying this and you keep trying to get at my man and stuff. And I was like, when has Mandy Rose once tried to get at Jimmy Uso? We've never seen this. Apparently they've had some sort of Twitter drama. I don't think I follow Naomi or Mandy Rose, so I apparently have missed out on this. But what even? Like, what even is this? I don't understand. Like, I like Mandy Rose and Sonya Deville as an act a lot. I don't know why Mandy Rose and Sonya Deville aren't just kissing under mistletoe if they're just standing there. Like, that would make sense, too. What even is this? I guess we're still building to that Naomi and Mandy Rose match that we were promised weeks ago and never happened because Mandy had a photo shoot or something in kayfabe. Mm-hmm. It's fun to add drama, but, like, I don't know. It just seems kind of lazy. Like, I'm going to try and steal your man from you. It's just kind of dumb.
Interesting that this week we didn't get any Becky Lynch, Charlotte, or Asuka.
Yeah, and that's my major criticism of SmackDown this week is that we didn't get any women's stuff except for this. This was the only women's representation we had on all of the Christmas SmackDown Live, which, I mean, I enjoyed the show and I thought it was really fun, but that's a major oversight. There are so many women on the roster, and, you know, not having any of your main event program, like, not everyone has to be on the show every week, but you'd think you'd get at least like a promo segment from them or something.
Yeah, you would think there was something. By the way, Ronda Rousey and Natalya from Raw was really fun. If you get a chance to watch that,
Oh, was it?
it's a good
Okay.
match. Yeah, it was weird we didn't see them this week. Maybe there's something else. Maybe there's a reason for it, we just don't know. But yeah. Main event time is Shinsuke Nakamura versus Rusev for the US title. The biggest compliment I can give this match is I did not give a flying fuck going into it, and then they made me care during it.
Yep.
So that's like the test of wrestling, right?
This was the most motivated Shinsuke Nakamura has looked on the main roster ever, maybe? Which is interesting because it's a match where he was losing. But I thought that he actually, like, I mean, it wasn't like he was super, super great like he was against Sami Zayn or Finn Balor or anything. But I thought Shinsuke Nakamura put in a good shift here, too. And it was nice to see Rusev wrestling like Rusev. Like, he's really, really good. And yeah, here was where I think you were talking about the piped in crowd chants. Like, it was kind of baffling to me that some of the crowd was chanting for Nakamura because it was like, Nakamura, Rusev Day, Nakamura, Rusev Day. And like, why is anyone chanting for Nakamura at this point? He's a dastardly, dastardly baddie who has not been doing a whole lot on TV either. So it's not like he's a super popular heel where everyone still loves him.
I mean, I
So,
guess the problem is he didn't really do anything that dastardly when he was
no,
a
I guess
heel.
not. I mean, he just like kicks AJ Styles in the balls a lot, which is kind of
Which, I
funny
mean, for
and
me,
he's more
really makes him a
interesting.
babyface.
Yeah, exactly.
But they had a great main event. Now, did you know the outcome to this before?
I did not. Nope.
Wow. I deliberately didn't say a word about anything because I thought. But yeah, I'm glad that you didn't get spoiled. So Rusev wins and becomes the new United States champion with a match
I
kick in
had
the
an
end.
inkling that it might happen because I had heard people talk about a spoiler from SmackDown. And so I was like, okay, if WWE is announcing a spoiler or announcing something, then a title change would make sense if they're trying to get people to watch it. But I didn't know. And I was like, I mean, the spoiler could have been like John Cena's coming back or something. You know, you never know with that kind of stuff. So yeah, I was really glad that I went into it not knowing because I got really invested in the match and was so, so pleased when Rusev won.
Yeah, so Rusev wins. Definitely the top five Nakamura matches had in the main roster. For me, it's kind of up there with I really liked the match, the TV match he had with Cena ages ago, and I think he had one with Orton around the same time, which is pretty good. I actually prefer this match to the Seth Rollins one at Survivor Series.
I think this one was better.
Rusev Day celebrations. Rusev and Lana are, you know, celebrating as he is the new United States champion. And then, in a very interesting twist, backstage we see AJ Styles. So I knew that Rusev won the title, right? I knew from the spoiler that he'd won. So I'm like, but and I'm this is one of the rare instances where I was watching it live. So I'm going to turn it off, right? And I'm literally about to turn off the show, and I see AJ walking backstage. And I'm going, what?
Like, what is this? What is happening?
So AJ walks into Vince McMahon's office and said, you know, you want to see me? Vince shakes his hand. And Vince asks, you know, what's your name and who are you? He says, I'm AJ Styles and I'm the phenomenal one. Two-time champion, SmackDown's a house that I built. And Vince says, well, why aren't you competing in your own house? Yet Daniel Bryan was here, raising hell. Vince said, you know, there's the new Daniel Bryan and he wants to know who the real AJ Styles is. Superstars come and go, they become complacent, they go home. He says he knows that's not AJ, but he said AJ has a black hole in his heart and a tormented soul. And he said, that's what you have and I want to see it. Vince said that if AJ has everything he thinks he does, he'll brutalize everyone who steps foot in the squared circle. There's an animal inside him, he wants to see it. Then he slaps AJ in the face and says, I'm going to see it. And then Styles knocks Vince out with a forearm. Then agents come to try and get AJ Styles away. AJ storms out. A referee goes to help Vince. And Vince is smiling on the ground saying, yeah, I think I'm good. What?
This was so bizarre, like so bizarre. I think Vince McMahon is really going senile at this point, right? Like he just sounds like a senile old man who's like, yeah, I want to see ya. fire in you, and you have a black hole and tormented soul. And what? It sounds like he's talking to the fucking Undertaker for some reason. And
setting up that Mania match.
It's just, I don't know, the whole thing was just bizarre, and I'm not mad at it. Like, it was crazy, because you don't think of Vince McMahon coming in, like, confronting AJ Styles, but I think it does say something as to how Vince McMahon backstage feels that AJ Styles is a very valuable performer on his roster, which when AJ Styles came into the WWE, people were wondering if Vince was ever going to get behind him and if he was ever going to be a thing. And, I mean, it turns out AJ Styles has had a great career in WWE. He, you know, I mean, the Y2AJ thing was not exactly the best start, but... he was champion, and like his appearance at the Royal Rumble right when he debuted, like that reaction, I think, kind of made AJ Styles, it made Vince look at AJ Styles like, oh, people like this guy, he could be a player in WWE. And you can see that even though AJ Styles is a little bit directionless right now because he doesn't have the title and you want to get him away from the title scene with Daniel Bryan, like Vince still sees him as someone who's very important on the roster. Because I mean, we said it last week when Vince came out to congratulate Asuka, right? Like, you don't see Vince McMahon himself getting involved in stories that he doesn't believe are main event or should be featured. So him coming and kind of like talking to AJ Styles backstage and letting AJ Styles put hands on him and knock him down speaks a lot to how he sees AJ Styles as a performer on the roster. And like, I have no idea where this goes. I have no idea where this leads. I have no idea what comes of it, but it makes AJ Styles, like, it's sort of, I guess, meant to light a fire under AJ Styles. Christmas SmackDown was so weird. Like, AJ Styles hit Vince McMahon and then Jamie Noble appeared. And I was like, what sort of weird time vortex is this?
I liked the segment. It was baffling. But then, do you know, AJ Styles has been phenomenally stale. That was deliberate.
Accurate.
For a long time, and if this Vince thing is going to lead to him being a little bit more interesting, then good. Do something different.
Yeah, and I think it's actually an effective use of Vince McMahon. Like, I don't want to see Vince McMahon all over the show talking to every character and just talking people down. But I think Vince McMahon kind of almost talking down to AJ here, but then letting him get retribution and letting him hit him. I mean, Vince is old. He is an old man, and he is starting to look like an old man, and he is starting to talk like an old man. Like, he isn't making a whole lot of sense anymore, but he still has this weird aura of being Vince McMahon. He's like the weirdest human alive, right?
Now that Michael Jackson is dead, he is the weirdest.
But he's a weird human, and he brings this aura of, like, power and charisma and intrigue and horribleness in some ways. Like, he's all of these things wrapped into one. So when he appears on screen, he feels like a big deal. And it definitely got people talking. Like, a lot of people are talking about, like, holy shit, AJ Styles hit Vince McMahon. So I think the segment was definitely effective. And do I want to see a Vince McMahon versus AJ Styles feud? No, I do not. Do I want to see AJ Styles reinvigorated as a character because he's had kind of this, like, fire lit under him? Yeah, angry AJ Styles is great.
Yeah, I it's bonkers, but I think that this is the kind of bonkers stuff that can sometimes lead to really good things.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, we'll see. I think the New Year's Day episode of SmackDown is actually taped this weekend.
Okay.
So yeah, watch out for that, Sandra. I think it's taped on Saturday. So.
Okay. If you start seeing things on Twitter, text me and I'll mute everything.
Okay. I'll find out what day it is as well. So yeah, that's it from us. You can follow us on Twitter, SandraRuthRW, KennyMC1985, Inside_TheRopes. You can go to our YouTube channel, youtube.com/InsideTheRopes, for loads of interview content, stuff coming up soon with Dave Meltzer, Jesse the Body Ventura, and many, many more. We've got a tour announcement coming up in the next few days that I will be announcing. Then there's also Patreon, patreon.com/InsideTheRopes, where you can support us. We do more content over there. I know a lot of people have said that we do almost too much content over there to keep up with, but if you have a few quid to spare, it does mean that we get to do all the bonus stuff, which means we get to do the pay-per-view reviews, the retro pay-per-view reviews, Power Slam stuff, NXT review, Pod of Thunder, good God, all the stuff that's on there. So go check that out, patreon.com/InsideTheRopes. The $7 tier, which is the top tier, is about the same price as a large meal from McDonald's. And we hope that we fulfill you far more than just one McDonald's meal.
I would hope so. I mean, even if you can't like listen to all of the content that we put out on Patreon, we really appreciate your support because, like, I mean, we do these shows for free and they're not exactly like free to produce or anything like that. And it's, I don't know, it's incredibly lovely that so many people actually support us on Patreon and want to hear us talk about wrestling.
Yeah, and we are gonna figure out ways to we're gonna do some new stuff on YouTube in the new year, and try some different stuff. I'll be back tomorrow with Finn. Well, tomorrow will be on Patreon, 24 hours early, the PowerSlam podcast. And then we are gonna do some stuff for like end of year awards, but I am a stickler that I don't like to do anything end of year before December 31st, because you never know
Because
what can
something
sneak
could
in.
happen.
Exactly. So. Yeah, maybe I'll just record some stuff with everybody separately and put it together as a show or something. We'll figure it out. So yeah, thanks for listening. We hope you have a good new year, because the next time we speak to you will be on January 2nd. So yeah, hope you have a good
Will
new
it? I
year.
thought we had to do retro before that.
But, I mean, people who don't listen to Retro Raw, people just listen to
Oh,
SmackDown.
okay, yeah.
And do you know what? New Year's kind of shite as well, so even if you don't celebrate New Year, I totally understand it. I'm gonna get pished somewhere, but you know, that's just because that's. Are you working? It's about 11:45, Sandra, as usual.
Yeah. So
Standard.
I might be able to get home like just in time for midnight. I'll probably get home at like 12:05
Yeah,
because
that
that'd be
would.
standard.
Well, whatever you're doing, we hope you enjoy it. And thanks for listening, everybody. We'll talk to you soon. And here to play us out is Rusev's theme, because he's the new US champion. Bye, everybody.
Happy Rusev Day. Bye.
Rusev Udria! Rusev Machka!